Travel, a Literary History, written and read by Peter Whitfield. No one really knows or can define what travel literature is. This would not surprise us if we were talking about poetry, or drama, or the novel, which are all fluid, complex forms of writing that have been endlessly changing and evolving over the centuries. But surely travel literature is simple and self-defining. Isn't it simply people writing about the foreign places they have visited? Yes, it undoubtedly is. But the places that they chose to visit, their reasons for visiting them, what they did when they got there, and the way they recorded their experiences, all these may take a thousand possible forms and styles, arising, of course, from the personality of the individual writer, but equally from the culture from which he or she has sprung. The motives for travel have been many: exploration, war, conquest, trade, pilgrimage, science, scholarship, adventure, emotional longing for escape, or pure hedonistic pleasure. All these have been powerful factors, and any or all of them can enter into a travel narrative. For this reason, the history of travel literature is at least as rich and complex as that of any other major genre. But in fact, it's probably more complex, since travel is intimately connected with global history, with our deepening knowledge of the world and its people. If we briefly scan the field of travel literature, we find Greek and Roman explorers of the ancient world, medieval pilgrims and crusaders in the Near East, the navigators and conquistadors of the Age of Discovery, the ambassadors, adventurers and gentlemen scholars of the 17th and 18th centuries, the poets, imperial soldiers, scientists, missionaries, archaeologists, mountaineers and wilderness writers of the 19th century. All these people brought back accounts of the world they had explored, but all were looking for different things. They saw with different eyes, and they wrote in different idioms. For long centuries, cultures and communities around the world had flourished in isolation from each other. Then, through travel, this isolation was broken down. Travel literature became a witness, indeed an agent, in the gradual integration of mankind. It became a form of discourse through which one civilization thought about another, and eventually thought about itself. Travel has been so deeply implicated in world history that without travel, there would really be no history. But of course, not all travel writers had serious intentions. Travel has always attracted humorists, eccentrics, loners and crackpots, whose pleasure it was to jaunt around the world, laughing at what they saw or at themselves. There is no doubt that European travel writing was for centuries marked, or tainted, by a stance of unashamed superiority vis-à-vis the people and places described. The customs, religion, government, arts, social life and character of the world's peoples were there to be analysed, perhaps marvelled at, but in the end rejected, mocked and judged to be simply foreign or even savage. This stance began with the first explorers in the New World, encountering the naked inhabitants of the Americas and debating whether they had souls, whether they were in fact human or not. But much later, even the English gentlemen who in their thousands made the grand tour of Europe in the 18th century to visit the famous sites of classical civilization and the artistic marvels of the Renaissance would always lament the condition of modern Italy and laugh at its disorder and backwardness. They could do this because they saw there a culture in decline, while their own was not. Essentially, they had to go abroad to improve their minds, but at the same time to reinforce their Englishness. In their colonies, Europeans created parallel worlds where they could meddle with and rearrange other societies, exercise power, but do no harm as they might if they attempted such things at home. The British in India, for example, could play politically, militarily, socially and intellectually. They could translate Sanskrit literature, shoot tigers, map the Himalayas, run tea plantations, march at the head of armies, and administer justice in the courts. They could do all these things and write about them with pride in their achievement. But it was always a parallel world, a world that was unreal because it was foreign and would always remain on another plane from home. Even the courageous and dedicated missionaries were taking superior European civilization with them, following with the cross and the Bible where the conquerors had led with the gun and the sword. Travel writing has been deeply involved in these various paradigms, these various ways of looking at the world, as a field for conquest, religion, science, commerce, and so on. But nevertheless, each travel writer has faced essentially the same task in his writing, namely, to reimagine the world. When the returning traveller sets down his experience on paper, it is inevitably reshaped in his memory and in his imagination. Anyone who writes a postcard home from holiday knows that. The travel writer plays a double part. He is both actor and spectator. What we see is seen through his eyes, but he is also part of the action. The travel writer is not merely recording an experience, he is creating it. This is why travel writing occupies an indefinable borderland between fact and fiction, why it is partly objective and partly subjective. If there is a new paradigm in the travel literature of the modern age, then surely it lies in the retreat from the stance of superiority, in a new humility brought to the task of reimagining the world. The 20th century was an age of dislocation, the shattering of European cultural claims by destructive wars, and the dissolution of certainties in social thought, science, art, and philosophy. The time was ripe for Western travellers to explore the world in a new spirit of openness, ready to learn from other cultures or alien environments, and in the process to learn about themselves. Europeans sought in the mountains, the deserts and islands of the world, a purity of existence which so-called civilization had lost. Western society created a complex, pressurized, dehumanized environment, and the need to escape from it became ever stronger. Escape and understanding, not the assertion of superiority, became the two qualities most prized in travel writing. Robert Louis Stevenson remarked, "There is no foreign land. It is only the traveller who is foreign." And the truth of this insight has become more and more widely accepted. The travel writer has long fulfilled the role of the representative of those who stayed at home. He or she brought news from realms we could not visit. Of course, in today's world, the number of those realms has dwindled to vanishing point. We can all go anywhere we wish. So we look to the travel writer for ideas and for inspiration, teaching us what to look for and what to find. And the great thing that we're all looking for is freedom. Freedom of the body and of the mind. The traveller is lured by the prospect of freedom from the deathliness of everyday reality. We are often told that real travel is now dead, killed by the age of mass tourism. But isn't even the common tourist, seeking to move, for a brief space of time, into some higher or freer realm of existence, out of the fetters of his everyday life, out of non-being into being? Every reader has his or her own favourite travel text. Mine is a brief but unique one. In 1336, Petrarch, the great humanist scholar and poet, set out to climb Mont Ventoux, the giant extinct volcano north of Avignon. He did this for no other reason but his desire to see the Alps from the summit and the sea below Marseille. He achieved his goal, and his account of the trip is the first text in the long history of mountaineering. But there was one very singular episode on his climb. He took with him a copy of the Confessions of St. Augustine, and how many other mountaineers have ever done that? At the summit, he decided to try an act of sortilege, opening the book at random to see what words fate would reveal to him. He did so, and he read these words: "And men go about to wonder at the heights of the mountains, and the mighty waves of the sea, and the wide sweep of rivers, and the circuit of the ocean and the revolutions of the stars, but themselves they consider not. Petrarch was thunderstruck at this uncanny coincidence, and returned to the valley, convinced that God was watching and guiding his life. He knew then that this outward journey had been merely a framework for a more profound inner journey, one which had ended in a revelation. This book is itself a journey across more than 2,000 years of travel writing. It charts the growth of our knowledge of the real world of which we are part, but it charts too the way the world and its peoples have been reimagined generation by generation, and the way we have slowly learned that there is no foreign land.